Welcome to Self-Compassionate Professor, a career wellness podcast for mid-career and recovering academics who want more. More meaning, balance, rest, joy, and more clarity. Our motto here is no regrets. So glad you're here. Hello, welcome. You are listening to episode 168, and I'm Danielle Delamar. So I had the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Aaron Furtock in today's interview. And going along with this month's theme, the theme for May of 2023 about finding wellness in the academy, Aaron talks about making space for the things that help her to feel healthy as much as possible during the semester, so that at the end of the semester, you're not just hit with this overwhelming sense of burnout. And for some of us, like for me and for Aaron, as she'll talk about in the interview, feeling sick at the end, right? Like your body's finally gotten a chance to slow down and digest everything that's happened. And in that process, illness hits. So yeah, what I love about this conversation is that Aaron really talks about how important it is to speak loudly about these things, about issues of wellness, and to sustain these conversations about wellness. Because as she talks about, being a whole professor is always a process. She has a blog called The Whole Professor Project, a space that she's created to unpack these issues and to have these conversations and to speak about these issues loudly. So yay, I'm really excited for you to hear Aaron's interview. And really quickly, before we get to that, I just want to say, if you want to emotionally digest the academic year that you just completed, and rest, as well as envision a career wellness destination you'd like to start journeying toward, you are invited to my Digest, Rest, and Envision workshop series. It's 1 hour per day next week. And when I say per day, I don't mean every single day, just Tuesday, May 23rd, Wednesday, May 24th, and Thursday, May 25th. It's noon Eastern. Lasts an hour. The Tuesday topic is digestion, digesting your emotions. The Wednesday topic is rest, trusting rest, naming what kind of rest you need. And the Thursday topic is about mining for insights, insights that will help you to imagine a new way of doing your career, whether that means staying in academia or not. If you go to my website, selfcompassionateprofessor.com, and click on Career Wellness Workshops, you'll be able to register for the series. It's free. You'll get a chance to really create some space for these things, and you'll get a chance to process this stuff in community, right? So often as academics, that is exactly what we're missing. We're missing the community piece. So yeah, you're invited. Come, it's free. Bring your friends, bring your colleagues. Let's make space for the things we haven't made space for all academic year. Oh, and speaking of envisioning something new, Aaron brings up the Vision Quest materials that she used. If you're interested in those same materials, you can go to episode 122. It's called The Career Vision Quest. And there I give you some possible steps to follow in order to embark on your own career wellness journey. All right, I'm excited to introduce you to Dr. Aaron Furtock now, and hopefully we'll see you next week at the Digest, Rest, and Envision Workshop Series. Here's Aaron now. Thank you for joining our conversation today. I'm talking to Dr. Aaron Furtock, Professor of STEM Education, and founder of the blog Whole Professor. Aaron, how's it going?
Oh, it's great. It's great. I'm so glad to have a chance to talk to you today, Danielle. Thanks for the invitation to join.
It is my pleasure. And we have been talking beforehand, and I was telling you some of the things that I am so grateful that you are sharing with us. And so I'm excited to get into that. Before I do that, though, I want to say I love the name Whole Professor for your blog. I love it. I think I told you that before, but can you just talk about what your intentions were for starting Whole Professor?
Yeah. So the Whole Professor project kind of was born in 2018 when I was just kind of going through a really hard time professionally and personally, and also was the year that I was promoted to full professor at my institution. And we were at, I was at the kind of convocation in the fall, and my parents were there, and my son was there, and they were handing out like medals to people getting tenure. And if you were a full professor, you were getting like these little glass kind of desk things. And my son, who was like 4 at the time, was like, "Are you going to get a medal? I want a medal." You know, like, what do you have to do to get a medal? What do you have to do to get one of those little glass sculptures? Because he saw all these people kind of going up and getting their hands shaken by the provost and getting their awards. And I was trying to explain to him, like, well, you know, I'm a full professor now, and I've done all these things. And so now I'm going to get this little glass thing to put on my desk. And he said to me, "What do you have to do to be a whole professor?" And he had misheard me, and it just like struck me to the core and brought tears to my eyes, because at the time I was in the middle of this migraine journey, which I know we're going to talk more about, and like feeling not good and healthy in my body and feeling just completely overcommitted and unbalanced at work. And I was just like, I don't know what it takes to be a whole professor or a whole person in this job, but I know I'm not doing it right now, and I want to try to find out. And so that night when I went home, and I was putting my daughter to bed, I had this idea of like, I don't know what this is, but I want to start the Whole Professor project today. And I like went online and I bought the domain name. And over time, I realized what I really wanted to do was just kind of write about the journey of trying to be more balanced, or the journey of seeking to be balancing, I guess, like knowing it's not done, but that we're always trying to do it, trying to be more of a whole person. And naming it made it like into a project for myself that I wanted to be thinking about and also sharing with other people. So that was the origin of the blog in 2018.
I had no idea what a great story that was going to turn into. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess let me just point out that I just called it the Whole Professor blog, but it's actually the Whole Professor project.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've mentioned this a couple of times since we've talked in the last several minutes that it's project because this is an ongoing process. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Cause I felt like very strongly that if I called it just the Whole Professor, it would be like fronting. I don't feel I'm not there. But it's just something I want to think about. It's a vision and almost like a set of questions that I ask myself, like, what am I doing in my life and with my family and in ways of being in my body and my community that have nothing to do with my job? And how am I holding myself accountable to that? And as soon as I sat down and kind of made the commitment to start writing about it, there was just so much like new things every day. Like it's a perpetual journey, which is why I really like the word project to go with it, because it's not done and it's writing from a place of trying to figure out, rather than like, oh, I've got this figured out and here's what you should do. That's not what the blog is about at all. It's about, wow, this is really hard. And here's what was hard today. And here's how I'm thinking about it, and just inviting people into that conversation.
Okay. And I'm wondering if, over the years, as you've been writing, and I will again acknowledge that you said, this is a journey, I'm writing from a place of not knowing, but is there anything you do know about what it feels like to be a whole professor, or what a whole professor is, like any defining elements?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many things that I am continuing to work on to be better at, and part of it is developing things that I'm committed to that are really compelling and interesting and feed me in my mind and in my body that are totally outside of work. So it's kind of like the like separating the work of me from the job. And I think that being a professor is so hard because like we have our work, and like I remember my husband who is in the nonprofit world and you know not in academia, like explaining to other people like Erin's doing her job at this postdoc institution now, and before that she was doing it at graduate school, and then she's doing it for this university, but like the work that she does follows her everywhere she goes. So I think it's really easy to kind of confound like ourselves and our identities and our work with our jobs, knowing that like of course our identities are like an integral part of like the research that we do. But I really wanted to hold a part of me that wasn't like being spent at work, if that makes sense. And so like ways of exercising and being outside and like eating and cooking and like being with my kids in like I think about it as like a high volume, low quality way versus like what I was seeking to do maybe 5 or 6 years ago, which was like low volume, high quality, which was really stressful. But just like being around and being together and yeah, like eating better, not just like eating the junk that I have in my purse because I didn't make time for myself to have lunch or things like that. You know, having a committed way of exercising and being outside every day versus like living a life where I just felt like shriveled, tense, huddled over my computer, you know, things like that. So I guess that's not really like a very well organized list, but those are some of the things that I try to think about a lot. Like even if with my graduate students were like, don't forget to eat vegetables and fruits, you know, like are you getting enough sleep? Things like that we can so easily lose sight of when we're on a deadline or grading something or just like all these elements of our job that feel so urgent that make us shrink that part of us that's for us that keeps us like feeling better in our bodies and feeling like we can keep showing up and having something left to give versus just being like getting to the end of the semester and being like completely spent and nothing left, which is the way I felt for years when I would get to like, you know, May 15th or December 15th, where it's just like, oh my God, I've got to do nothing now for 2 weeks because I just left it all on the table. You know, that was not an easy way of living.
So I'm thinking about trust, and how do you trust it's okay to take care of yourself? Because I think so many of us are so scared, right? We're in the fight flight all the time, and we're trying to get it done. And if we don't get it done, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And to tell somebody who's in that place to, you know, breathe and to, you know, make some healthy food for themselves. That's really hard. And so I'm wondering how you sort of switched out of that place so that you could trust it was okay to take care of yourself or how you've done it. I know you said it's ongoing.
Yeah, it is ongoing because I think that we're all under so much pressure to perform and to produce. And, you know, for those people who are on contingent contracts or on the tenure line or going on the job market, like we're always wanting to, you know, bring in more grants and get more publications and do the things that are going to help us advance in our careers. And that's real, like, you know, losing your job, losing your livelihood because you're not producing enough. And the thing that I really struggle with is that there's no upper limit to that. Like, how much is enough, you know? And so, you know, if I'm just like barely clearing the bar or like soaring 5 feet over the bar, like I don't even have a sense of how much to do. And, you know, and I can remember like when I first started my position 15 years ago as a new assistant professor, I went out to lunch with somebody who was a tenured full professor in my department who I had known previously. And the advice they gave me was like, get up at 4:30 in the morning, you know, and start writing and, you know, like basically all this advice that was like sacrifice your sleep, you know, do all these things so you can just keep writing. And then I remember, and I was like, wow, that sounds really intense. And 6 months later, I found out that the same faculty member also liked to write while like watching TV. and I was like, oh, well, maybe if I just write and don't watch TV at the same time, I can be much more efficient when I'm writing, and then I can watch TV later, or I can go for a walk or something. And so part of it is like just doing one thing at a time and trying to be focused on that, and then recognizing that we can only do one thing deeply at a time for so long before we have to, our minds need a break. And so, you know, getting outside and walking around, like research shows that stimulates our creativity, and being well rested helps us think more clearly, and nourishing our bodies helps us feel more healthy. And so I guess the way that I trust is that I know that like when I am well rested and eating well and taking care of my body, I show up for work in a different way, and I show up in interactions with other people in a different way versus like being really tired and feeling really like wretched is the word that I keep thinking of how I felt for so many years, just feeling awful in my body and having low energy. And so I guess that the trust comes from, I mean, and I have to say, I don't even know if I can trust it, because sometimes I'll be like, oh, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. And, but just trying to remind myself of like, we know on research on how people do deep work. We know from research on creativity that actually taking breaks and taking care of ourselves helps us show up for work in a better way. So it's not like a either or, this like, you know, one way or the other thinking. It's like you can have both. But taking care of yourself helps you, yeah, just show up for your work, I guess, differently. That's the thing I'm always trying to remind myself.
Okay. And so this is also making me think of your migraine journey.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just wondering what role that played in the trust. Or I don't know, whatever. You may not want to think about it in terms of trust like I am right now, but however you want to think about it, how would you start talking about your migraine journey and how it plays into this whole professor thing that you've been working on?
Yeah. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot over the last couple of years, because and I have talked to a lot of faculty who also suffer from migraines and are kind of managing this in the course of our work. And it's something that I had going back to probably being in middle school, is the first time I can remember like the kind of like go to bed, dark room, no loud sounds, you know, for hours because of a really bad headache. But they really started kicking up in graduate school. And, you know, in retrospect, I realized that was like a sign of me living my life and in my body in a way that my, the way that my particular biology is constructed, like my body responds with migraines when it passes thresholds, that are, you know, too much stress or not enough sleep or, you know, variable blood sugar or being dehydrated or like lots of other things. After I had, they got really, really bad after I had my two kids, and I was in the kind of interval between being an associate professor and a full professor. Like that span of time was the worst of my migraine journey. And in retrospect, I realized it was because of trying to do too much, of trying to do all the things and show up for all the people and go on all the trips and present at all the conferences. And my body was just like, no, like you can't keep doing this. So it was really like a portal of realizing like you just can't go on this way. And there were some very low moments that led me to, you know, seek out the care of a neurologist and conduct what I think about as like the most unscientific experiment on myself by like changing all the things at once to try to figure out like how can I get out of feeling this way. And after trying a whole bunch of things, I came to the conclusion that it was actually my job that was making the migraines as bad as they got. Because the way migraines work, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything, but like my understanding of how migraines work is that they're multifactorial and there's lots of different little triggers, and each one kind of adds on top of the other. And then eventually, if you have too many of those, it pushes you past the threshold and then your body responds in this way. And in my case, it's like, you know, pounding a nail behind my right eye, and like nausea and confusion and insomnia, but also really tiredness. Like, it becomes impossible to show up for my family and to do my work, or even to, like, you know, cook a meal for myself. Like, I have to go to bed. So figuring out like how to stay below that threshold, was, you know, a multi-year journey of like trying different medicines, trying different forms of exercise, doing food elimination, cutting out a lot of different things, and they got better. But I also realized that, like, why is it that I keep getting migraines on Wednesdays? Well, Wednesdays I am teaching and in meetings all day. And by the time I get home, I would be having a migraine by like 5 or 6 o'clock at night, like every single Wednesday. And I started putting all these pieces together and just realizing, like, I can't keep traveling like this for my job. I can't keep working like this with no breaks. My body won't let me. And when I started changing that, to my great surprise, was part of what started making me feel better.
Okay. So I am just thinking about this thing that you said about other faculty. You know, other faculty who suffer from migraines. And I'm wondering, what sorts of conversations have you had with other faculty? And have they come to sort of the same conclusion? Like, my job is making it worse, or mm-hmm. what are, I don't know. I'm just wondering about the themes of the conversations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I know that like everyone's experience of migraine is different. And usually I say many of it, I shouldn't like overgeneralize, but I'll say many of the conversations I've had with people is just like, I have these migraines, they're getting worse. I don't know what to do. What have you tried? Like asking me what I've tried, like what medications I've tried. And sometimes I find out that people are just kind of treating themselves with like things they can get at the drugstore and not necessarily like seeking the ongoing care of a like a neurologist or a headache clinic, which was really like the game changer for me. And I remember like the first, and I had to like suffer through this for, you know, 10 plus years before finally getting a referral. And then, you know, I had to wait months to be able to get in to have an initial appointment. But then when I got there, I remember like the medical assistant who was bringing me to a room was like, are you having a migraine today? Like, do you want me to turn the lights off? Because I know these fluorescent lights are really bright. And I just felt in that like 5 second interaction seen in a way that like, because fluorescent lights are one of my main migraine triggers, or like, especially being in a room with no windows and fluorescent lights, which like happens all the time as a professor, in buildings where you're in this kind of artificial light situation. I just felt so seen. And then that kind of led me on this journey of starting to understand like what triggered the migraines, how can you stop them before they even really get started. So my conversations with people are often like, what kind of healthcare have you sought out, or have you tried, you know, like acupuncture and seeing an osteopath, or like, these are all different things that I've done. And each one of them helped me in a really significant way. And so just encouraging people to say, like, you don't have to live like this. There are lots of things you can do to get out of it. And here's some things that I've tried. And I just really suggest asking for help, and also like letting people in your environment know, like, you know, when you have a migraine, like sometimes it becomes impossible to work. And, you know, that there we like seeking those accommodations within our own institutions. But I remember I was like kind of scared to tell people, like I wrote about this on my blog. Like, there was a day when I had a really bad migraine coming on, and I had just come off of one, and my brains were totally scrambled. And I like was doing this big assessment in a PhD class, and I like opened the spreadsheet to do some calculations, and like the math just escaped me because I just felt like my brains had been scrambled from all of these, from all these multiple migraines. And I didn't want to tell anybody because that was the year that my case was being reviewed, you know, for full professor. And I was like hiding it because I didn't want people to think I couldn't do my job, rather than like helping people see, like, I have this chronic condition, and the best cure for it is rest and not trying to force myself to continue working. That just makes it worse.
I'm wondering what you would have done differently back then, because I know you said you hit it, and you hit it, and you were successful, and you got full professor. But I'm wondering if you would have trusted the process in a different way. I don't even know if I'm not articulating this well, but I'm wondering if you would have done it differently now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're all human, and I think I was hiding that from people. Because I had when I was growing up, the parallel was I was teaching the same course years before that. When I was also being kind of really going up for tenure, and my daughter had kind of a major medical thing that came up in the middle of that. And I had to miss some classes, and I was super distracted because I was so worried about her, and it ended up being fine. But like for a week and a half, it was really terrible. And I did tell people about it, and my colleagues were so great. They were just like, what do you need right now? You know, we can do this another, you know, like we don't have to watch you teach today. We can do this another time. Like I felt so held and seen and understood by them, like in that moment of vulnerability. But for some reason, like that's why I say this is a project, because it's like I'll figure something out and then it's like I forget. Like I go back to being socialized of like, no, I have to hide this. And so I think that if I had just trusted that, you know, you don't have to, it's okay, you can seek help, you can tell people it's going to take a little longer, that would have been better. And in the end, I was unable to do the calculations I needed to. And I knew that like, if I try to do this, it could be wrong. And that's not good. So I waited. But, you know, I wasn't like I can't remember like going to the people who were observing me and being like, you know what, I've had like, you know, all these migraines this month. I was scared. So like, I think that trusting that we're human and that these are medical conditions that are not about my ability to be a good professor, but that interfere with my ability to work. Yeah. I wish at that time I had done differently. And I also acknowledging that like the tension is that we're in these positions and we're being looked at and evaluated all the time. And that creates this pressure to perform that is unhealthy. You know, and I recognize like the privilege of reflecting on that now being at the place I am, and how hard it was for me, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
And I guess the thing that's striking me is just like, as you learn to talk about it, as you become more willing to be vulnerable, and tell me where I'm wrong, but it seems to be the thing that gets other faculty to talk to you about it.
Yeah. And every time when I made the commitment, because I was writing on the blog kind of intermittently over the last few years. And, you know, when I go back to some of those earlier posts, I'm like, wow, this is really long. And I can tell I wasn't really sure what to do with this yet. And when I kind of figured that out and made the commitment to write regularly, I still have that moment of vulnerability every time I hit publish, even though, you know, I know that it's hard to just put the story out there. And I had been like talking to people about it here and there and in kind of like safe spaces over the years, but then just to like blast it out to anyone who has the link every single time it feels vulnerable, but I know that people are going there and it's resonating with them. And that's kind of the motivation to keep putting it out there, because I do want people, you know, if they don't feel like they want to talk to people in their immediate environment, to try to find places to talk about that, or to, you know, to feel like maybe if we make this conversation a little louder, about like, why is it so hard to be a whole human in this profession, to make that more of a conversation, you know, which is why I love listening to your podcast, because I feel like that's another place where that conversation is happening. Like, how can we be more compassionate if for ourselves in this life? Hopefully more people will start to feel more empowered to join in that conversation.
And I guess I'm also thinking about like people with other sort of medical conditions.
Absolutely.
You know, chronic invisible stuff that you're talking about. Have you had people reach out to you with that, those kinds of struggles, since starting the blog? And what kinds of struggles are you seeing? What are those conversations like?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say that I've been in conversation with many people for years who have all different kinds of chronic illnesses, and, you know, the ones that go beyond something that can be managed with the medication, you know, things or with a lifestyle change, which I recognize is, you know, something about my experience, but, you know, people who are needing surgeries or needing to take leaves. You know, there's a lot of, I guess, just like ways of being in our job that are difficult for people who are managing long-term chronic illnesses. And, you know, I think that and even like the way our contracts are written, where we have like a 9-month position, but not necessarily like leave days. You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I was a classroom teacher, there was a system, and like you had like paid leave days. Like, our jobs aren't necessarily constructed that same way. And so what does it mean if I become ill and there's multiple days that I can't work, or even like not just for like physical conditions, but like if I'm having a mental health crisis, like what does that look like? And how are our universities supporting us in that? That's something that I think we want to continue that conversation, because when you're not feeling well for in multiple ways, it is so hard to continue to show up and teach and do our research. And yeah, I have been in these conversations with people, and I hope that those conversations can become louder.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about how you have navigated without the current institutional support. When you do need multiple days off or whatever it is, like, How are you doing that? I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who have chronic illnesses who would love to hear some of your insights.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have a lot of, I guess I don't have a ton of insights for that, because I think that, you know, in my case, I only ever had to take a few days away from work, and I have had a very supportive deans and supportive colleagues over the years who have been able, like when it got really bad and I literally couldn't go to work. And even like, and then, you know, in the age of Zoom, right? It's like, well, you know, you can Zoom into the meeting and saying like, well, actually being on a computer makes it even worse. I need to just go dark. People have been very accommodating of that. And so I guess I've realized that as I felt more empowered to share with people what I'm finding out, you know, I'll have graduate students say like, you know, I didn't come to class a couple of weeks ago, but it was because I was having a migraine, and being able to sit and talk with them about like, you know, how are you managing this? And thank you for letting me know. And I know what that experience is like, and I know how hard it is. And I know how even when the pain is gone, it's still not back to normal. So I guess I've just been appreciative that in my case, it's been able to be handled, you know, informally with the support of people who kind of have been super understanding, and also in letting like my students know what's happening, like I'm going to miss office hours because I have a migraine. It leads more people to come to me and talk to me about what's going on with them. And so it becomes although it makes me feel vulnerable to tell people what's going on, it makes me more human, and then it allows other people to become more human around me, is what I've discovered. And I'm not in any kind of leadership position with power around that, but I can support students in feeling like they can, you know, learn to talk to, you know, their professors, or think about like, how can I get help for myself, and also try to take the space that my body and my mind really need to get through this latest episode that I might be experiencing.
I want to just ask if there's anything else you want to make sure you say. I did bring up the question earlier when I emailed you about like, is there a gift of migraines? You may or may not want to answer that, but is there anything you really want to say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think because when you sent me this question, I was kind of like, how would I answer this? And I feel like it's been, I said it earlier, it's been more of like a portal, or almost like a sensor that helps me see when I've gone too far in a particular direction. Like I've traveled to another time zone and I haven't been paying attention to keeping my blood sugar level, which is a big migraine trigger for me. So it's why I'm always like eating every 2 hours just to kind of keep that constant, or, or recognizing that, like, maybe, you know, I feel like I have been pushing it too hard with the writing or with the research or with my commitments, and I need to take some space back to myself to take some breaks. So I think thinking about it as like a sensor that, like, wow, you've gone too far in this direction and something needs to be pulled back. Because I think even like once I was under the care of a neurologist and getting medications, the first way that I started handling it was like, well, I'm just going to take this medication to get rid of migraine, and I'm just going to go right back to doing what I was doing before, to kind of like, you know, reanimate myself, get rid of the pain, and then just keep going. And then only for the migraine to come back a couple of days later. I guess I'm grateful that it's helped me realize that I have to find another way of being, and I just can't go all the time. And sometimes it also makes me feel like, wow, it would be great if I didn't have to go to bed so early to get the sleep I need in order not to feel ill. Like, well, I could do so much more, or I could watch these TV shows, but no, actually my body needs the sleep. And so just finding another way of being, I guess, has been a gift, but it's hard for me to think about naming it that way. It's like the migraines being a gift. Like, it's been a portal through which I've been able to travel to discover that there's just gotta be another way, and that I have so many other things I want to do with my life that aren't about my work as a professor. And, you know, finding ways of, you know, being outside and eating better and taking better care of my body and traveling less and being with my family has helped me see that, there's just a lot to be excited about. That's not my job, but that helps me show up for my job in a better way. So that, I guess that's the portal. I guess I'm grateful for it, but I also sometimes I'm just like, wow, this is just such a drag. I would love to be able to live a more variable lifestyle, because the migraine wants you to have every day kind of be the same. So I guess if there was a little bit more possibility for staying up late, you know, or, you know, traveling and not feeling really sick the first day, that would be great. But that's not what my experience has been. And I guess I'm still grateful for feeling better than I did many years ago.
You know, it's not lost on me that I'm asking the question, is there a gift when I myself have never had migraines, right? So yes, I hear you. And I'm wondering about, like you said, there's a lot of things about my life to be excited about that have nothing to do with my job. And I'm wondering what you are currently most excited about.
Yeah. Well, I think when we were talking a little while back, I was telling you how I used your Vision Quest materials last fall to kind of get myself reoriented around like what I had been through for the last few years. And I think that part of what I came out of that with was that I just really, the part of my job that I've always loved the most is writing. And I teach a class on writing to graduate students. And I often will joke with them that maybe I became a professor because I just needed something to write about. I kind of through that Vision Quest, and I was rereading Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way at the same time, I just kind of realized that, like, I've been holding myself back from the creative writing that I did when I was younger. Even like when I was in high school, I had a column in my high school newspaper, and have always kind of like published these little bits and pieces and like Inside Higher Education or The Chronicle that aren't about my research. And I was really like throttling myself from doing that. Like, I think the thing I was most wanting to do was just to write what I wanted to write about. And so I've been really excited about holding the space for the whole professor project, and also taking a memoir class to kind of learn more about how do I write about my life, because that's something I've always wanted to do. And the other thing I haven't really mentioned that's been a big part of my journey back to feeling better in my body is that I've I am become a solidly mediocre runner again in middle age after doing it in my 20s and then injuring myself and stopping. And so, you know, a good day is a day when I'm able to protect the space to do the work of me, and the work of me is getting outside and running very slowly and post-COVID, you know, mostly walking, but just being outside and having that kind of fresh air, and then sitting down and writing from my heart versus my head, which is, you know, whereas professors were taught to write and, you know, writing from this place of like expertise and knowing versus like writing from a place of like not knowing and I'm still figuring this out, which is what the blog is about. Those are the things I've been really excited about recently. And I've noticed that even just taking a little space for that lets me show up for all the other aspects of my job in a way that I feel really good about, because I've taken that time for myself, for my mind and for my body, and to like do the thing that my spirit really wants to do. And it's not that I'm also very invested in my job and the research that I do, but it's just been a total game changer to start doing that, to doing the writing that I realize I've been wanting to do for years and just haven't given myself permission to do.
I love the way you spoke about that. Like I could imagine that perfect day myself, run, walking, and then coming and sitting down and writing from my heart. Like that sounds absolutely lovely. I'm so glad that you've discovered that. And I love I became a professor so I could have something to write about. I love that too. And just sort of having that craft. And I wonder about the sort of craft of everyone's life, right? And I think about like, how does that craft, once you've identified what your craft is, how does it impact you in terms of your wellness, in terms of your ability to connect to others, in terms of your ability to change the world. Like I think about that kind of stuff a lot. So that's really resonating with me as you say that.
I was going to say that I think I didn't realize, because I had been like carrying around note cards, like kind of Anne Lamott style, like bird by bird style, for people who've read that book. And when I would have an idea that I wanted to write about, I would put it on a note card, and I was doing that for like 10 years. so it was like just liberating to like finally say like, you know what, I'm just going to start writing about what's on these note cards rather than like storing them for my future self. Like, you know, my future self is now, and I'm going to start letting myself be the person that I've always wanted to be, rather than like storing these ideas up for when I have time for it. Cause I was never, you know, if I'm going to be a professor, I'm, you know, when am I going to have the time to start writing about this, you know, unless I make it for myself. And even if it's just 15 minutes in the morning, it's been cathartic to like you say, like to start allowing myself to have that craft. It's just been a total game changer.
So good. How can people find you? Is there anything you want to put out there in terms of, I want to have this kind of conversation with people?
Yeah, well, I think the easiest way to find me is at the blog, which is wholeprofessorproject.net, all one word. And you can sign up for the emails that will just kind of come out when there's new posts there. So I think that's the easiest way to get connected. And you know, they're welcome to reach out to me via email as well at the University of Colorado. So my name is very Googleable, and I'll come up right away if people look for me that way. And I think I'm just interested in this conversation about how we can reconstruct our ways of being in this profession that are just more sustainable. So we're not just like pushing through, and then like, oh, deep breath, it's finally a break, and then pushing through, like, oh, now it's summer, you know. I would just love for us to find ways of being that are more consistent and not just this kind of cycle of the semester and cramming everything in, and how we can have louder conversations, like go into work on Monday and be like, wow, I did this thing over the weekend that had nothing to do with work and it was so great. And, you know, we have those conversations, but they feel like, oh, is it okay that I wasn't working? You know, and like, it should absolutely be okay that we're not working. Like we should allow ourselves the space to be humans in this job. And that's the conversation that I want to help cultivate and, you know, join in with lots of people around making that conversation louder.
And I like, as you say that, I'm thinking, yeah, and we get to, I say we as if I'm still in academia, but we get to enjoy October. Like we get to live in the world during March. What? That was like unheard of when I was in academia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, last fall, my husband and I went to Southern Utah to do a trail race over a weekend in September and October. And it was like the first time I'd ever done like a fun thing, not on a university. I was like, can I do this? Can I tell people where I'm going? You know, because it felt risky and it felt like I was doing something wrong. And then I was like, but people who have other professions take time off and vacations in this time of year. And then when I started talking about it, I was like, other people do this too, who have my job, but we don't talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and that was a revelation for me. And right, like October can be fun again. You know, March too, and we can get to May and not like I used to get to May and just be sick for weeks because of, you know, the cold, head cold turned into sinus infection, which turned into bronchitis, and then recovering from that before I could even start the summer. Like, wouldn't it be great if we just got to the summer and it's like, and now this, like feeling rejuvenated and embracing it and not like we had nothing left.
I feel like the theme of this conversation is we can talk about it. We can talk about chronic illness. We can talk about, you know, going on a trip in October. We can talk about everything. And we should talk about it. And I'm hearing you say, you know, and the conversation should be louder, much louder.
Yeah, much louder. Completely. Totally agree.
Awesome. Erin, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for the invitation and for cultivating this important space for these conversations, not just today, but, you know, with all of your work. I appreciate that so much.
Thanks for listening to Self-Compassionate Professor. Email me at danielle@selfcompassionateprofessor.com. And for those of you who are committed to finding career wellness, I invite you to join the sabbatical program. We're a group of academics who normalize rest, play, and feeling whole. We make career decisions from that place. Find out more at selfcompassionateprofessor.com.